Ooh.
Dennis Rodman makes his acting debut. We saw Double Team, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Can't you know you wonder how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am Paul Scheer, and we have a very special donor shout-out. The guy sponsoring today's episode is Brandon Hayes. He gave a whopping $250 to How Did This Get Made? Thank you so much, Brandon. You are the best. You keep the lights on, you keep our engineers happy, you make the show. We thank you and dedicate it to you. But without any further ado, let me introduce my co-host, Jason Manzoukas. How are you, Jason?
Well, Paul, I have a low fever.
A low fever?
A little bit of a sweats going on, so I don't feel great.
Well, I'm going to tell you, you're going to really enjoy your co-host today because she also has a low fever. Please welcome June Diane Raphael.
Hi, Paul.
How are you? How are you feeling?
I'm good. Right before this, I took some Robitussin.
I was in the car with you. I saw it all happen.
Oh, and are you upset? I'm sorry.
Wait, don't reveal our special guest.
I know I gave him a big hug, and I don't want him to think that I'm contagious.
No, I caught the fever.
I'm going to take my temperature on the air.
Jason is now putting... Can we get a picture of this?
I don't have a fever,
though. Can we get a picture of that?
I caught the fever, the Double Team. Oh, should I say that?
No.
I caught the fever of How Did This Get Made?
The temperature chart has gone off. If you're wondering who's talking, oh, let's see.
99.1.
91, not temperature.
That's not real.
I mean, it's barely a fever, but I feel...
You can go to school.
I feel shitty. I feel like really like... Brr.
Well, just
but you're right, that's barely a fever.
Barely a fever. Nothing to complain about. And to introduce our special guest, you've already heard, please welcome Owen Burke. You know him from the amazing Earwolf podcast. Owen and TJ read the news. Welcome,
hello.
Owen.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm a huge fan of the show and of movies in general.
And are you excited about getting sick from these two people that you're sitting in between?
I can't wait because I'm getting on a plane tomorrow. And
where are you going?
I'm going to San Francisco.
With me?
With Paul Scheer.
Sketchfest?
Yes.
We call it Frisco. I just keep calling it Frisco until someone pushes me down a flight of stairs.
Well, normally I would be nervous when two of the people on this show have a low-grade fever or not feeling well, but I honestly believe this is one of the best movies that we have ever done.
It is. I was blown. This movie was mind-boggling.
Everything about it.
I couldn't figure out what was going on. It was...
At first, I thought it was like a video to learn a new language or something. It was like how to teach English to people from the Eastern Bloc or something.
That's true, because it's also like, in what world is Van Damme's name Jack Quinn?
Yeah.
Like, in what universe?
Well, this is the same problem we had when he was in Street Fighter.
Yes.
Right? Which is...
He was a very American.
Are we to believe he is an American?
Right.
Is nobody going to speak up against this?
And it's the same thing that they do with Schwarzenegger. Like, he's the sheriff of a small town in Mexico. It's like,
I feel like with the names and stuff, once you know your actor's Van Damme, like, why not just adjust it?
Yeah, it's Petro or something,
Yeah. What is Jack Quinn give us?
Because they say his name once, like, right at the top, and they're like, Jack Quinn's going in, and he's got to get this plutonium, and then... In 14 hours, and then he gets to retire.
This is my whole problem with the movie.
I couldn't figure out the cold open even remotely.
Well, here's my thought. I think what they thought was the movie originally started out with Jean-Claude Van Damme by the pool with his wife, and then he gets caught up in this thing. But that's like 30 minutes until the first action scene. So like, oh shit, we need to like tack on a James Bond thing, because literally the movie opens with, like, this is his last mission. And then after that, it's like, hey, why don't you come back for your last mission?
Yeah.
Like, it's like there's two last missions.
Well, I also couldn't make heads or tails of that. He steals a cool truck with, I guess, plutonium in it. Is that the deal?
Yeah, well, he's stealing it from Starve.
I couldn't tell anything that was going on. I didn't know who was who.
Yeah.
They're talking about names, and I couldn't tell who was the names. And I literally wrote, I was like, it's minute two, and I'm already confounded.
Because they also are doing it, it seems like, all... Post, like all ADR.
It's all ADR. Yeah. The ADR budget on this was insane. I actually, like, when I was watching, I'm like, you could watch the whole first scene, you're just like, this is all ADR.
Yeah.
And then it's like, anything that comes out of Rodman's mouth is all ADR. Like, there's shots of him point blank where his lips aren't moving, and it's like, we gotta get out of here. And it's just like, it's almost like he's Charlie MacArthur in Chester, or something. Like, he's a ventriloquist. It's like, and sometimes I think Jean-Claude Van Damme is doing the lines for him. It's like, Jean, while you're here, why don't you just do Dennis's lines?
Let's lay it down.
He hasn't shown up. Just do them, because they're like, they're imperceptible.
Well, my favorite part, and I will say, I did enjoy the movie quite a bit.
Sure,
it's
yeah.
Oh my gosh,
it's
I loved it.
Really wonderful. But the best part of the cold open is in the end when he drives, he sort of, I guess, gets away from yes. what I don't really know. I don't know what the stakes, I didn't
well, no,
know
he's
what was
stealing
happening.
That truck.
Okay, so he's stealing the truck with the plutonium in
yes.
it? Yes. Okay.
Which, of course, you smash through walls and through people when you have plutonium.
That was my biggest concern. Like, that truck is brutalized. It, like, at any point, that right. could just
he
be
drives
a gigantic...
off of a cliff.
He drives off of a cliff.
He drives it down a
but
cliff
But then when
face.
He finally... is like out of danger's way. He just sort of drives into a forest or a street
yeah.
as though no one's ever going to notice yep.
this giant truck of yeah. plutonium.
I've never seen a truck so big. I mean, it was the most unusual machine.
My only knowledge of plutonium comes from Back to the Future, and it seems like you must carry those things in very specific ways and in some sort of a case. That
no,
has
it
some...
seemed very irresponsible what he was doing.
And why was there so... Can you even have that much plutonium?
Like, well, what I was wondering, too, was at the beginning when he steals the truck has like a hitch on the back, and there's more truck.
Yes. Yeah.
And then
yes.
that gets lost along the way, and I was like, isn't that where the plutonium
yeah.
is?
He doesn't care. He just has to get out of there. It's like, yeah, there's the plutonium. I'm just going to drive.
And so then we just cut to 3 years later.
3 years later.
3 years.
South of France.
Well, this is what I love. I loved this house in the south of France because it was on this, like, cliff peninsula, this beautiful castle with a pool. And then a guy climbs up the cliff, and he's like, how did you find me? Maybe because you're in the most exposed house in Europe.
The other thing that I thought was hilarious is it's supposed to be like this remote location where nobody can find him. And there is a train that is going on
yes.
right
okay.
behind the house. A train.
right
a large train yeah. goes right by them.
They live by the tracks.
They live yeah. by the train.
But here's the weird thing. I thought that must come back.
Nope.
Because otherwise, why would they ever just shoot it with the train there? Like, why?
Fantastic question.
It never comes back.
Or why not wait to get the shot when the train isn't sure. there?
The light is perfect. The light. Now.
That's it. I was like, the train can't be there all the time. The train just happened to pass in that shot. You take, do another take.
Nope.
No.
Jean-Claude works. That's
the
it.
Nobody will notice the train.
I really think that this was all tied into like some sort of like Perillo Tours or some sort of European tour company. It was like, we can go to Rome, we can go to all these locations. It's all set up and you have to write the movie around these locations.
I like, there's so much, again, in this movie that is so kind of shoehorned in where you could have simplified this entire, movie could be so simplified. He doesn't have to be retired.
Nope.
That doesn't come into play really that much at all. All he needs to be is a secret agent with a pregnant wife. That's it.
Yep.
Start the movie there and have this guy.
Because there's no sense in the rest of the movie that he's struggling with being back in the game.
No. Not at all. He loves it instantly.
Yeah.
The only thing he's struggling with is dialogue. That's the only thing he's struggling
with.
Well,
he immediately accepts the mission. The second
his wife
mission.
Is pregnant, by the way.
Ready to give birth. And
well, by the way, that I had a problem with that. There's a huge plot point that, you know, he's sort of racing to get back by her due date.
36 hours.
Yes, that's the other thing. She's going to give birth.
But how does he know? I mean, very rare that you actually give birth on
your
due date.
Does the movie take place in 36 hours?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, but the colony doesn't
but
happen at the same time.
That's what he said. He'll be back in 36 hours.
Oh, I'm sorry. Got it. Okay,
he'll
sorry,
be back
Jim,
in
36 ahead.
Hours. No, but I was going to say it's a pretty flawed like plot device that that's the timeline we're working on when most women do not give birth on their due dates.
Yeah, normally weddings I've missed because of my baby's birth. I've missed every wedding just because it's like, oh, she's going to give birth that day. No, it's 2 weeks later and I miss
but
fun weddings.
It's not. I don't even think it's like she's going to give...
a real life regret.
Wow. Yeah,
you know
really.
What? I miss a lot of open bars, you know, and after parties.
My, I don't think she was giving birth in 36 hours. I think he was saying to her, I'll be back. It not like Schwarzenegger,
basically. No,
although Dennis Rodman does do an "I'll be back" that is like Schwarzenegger.
Yes, well,
later
of course.
In the movie.
He talks about what day is it, and he writes the birth date. And
but yeah. I mean, if she's giving birth in 36 hours, this movie spans quite a long period of time. She doesn't give birth until the third act, which is months later.
No, I think
later.
She, because she also doesn't look, she only looks a little pregnant.
Yeah.
I don't think
she's promising her 36 hours.
Yeah, I think he's saying that's all it's going to take to clean this mess up.
Yeah.
And then I'll be back. Don't worry.
So when he... when he's in the colony and he writes that butterfly in the calendar,
but remember,
what is that date?
Remember, there's multiple pages of months he's tacked up.
Like, that's 9 months.
You know what I mean? It's, I don't know.
That's her due date that he's writing in advance, that he's got to get out by then.
But eventually she does give birth on her due date.
Yes.
Yes. But that's months later. It's not 36 hours.
No, I understand that.
Like, scheduled. They were going to induce.
It's a C-section.
Right, I'm just saying the stakes seem to be that this birth is going to happen right on that day.
I think that there's a little bit of an issue. So you're just saying that you don't like that the whole movie is driving towards
this one day. That's really kind of arbitrary.
Well, I think the movie has a little bit bigger problem.
Well, I think the biggest... I think what's driving him isn't to get out of the colony for the baby's birth. It's because Mickey Rourke sends him the message, I have your butterfly.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, she's an artist, and she makes big steel sculptures and all of this.
Wonderful artist.
And, you know, it's like he loved this giraffe or camel, whatever it was. And
it's
like
a swan.
A swan. And he really loved it.
Your swan is beautiful. You are beautiful.
He loved it. He loved it. And then since he's been gone missing, because he goes missing in the middle of the movie, she's like, yeah, I'll sell that. You know, she doesn't have any connection to it. Like, no, there's no nostalgia for her. She's like, yeah, I'll sell that to you. Whatever. I'll meet you in Rome. I'll sell the thing my missing husband loved.
Well, here's the thing. Even, like, before we even get to the fact that he messes up this mission, because, so he goes to, like, Antwerp to kind of.
I love how other, like, go crazy to show you how weird Antwerp is. There's like scuba diving go-go girls.
Well, he's watching a scuba diver go-go dancer, and then he's reflecting on his wife, which I thought was really odd. It's like he's going to a strip club just looking at a stripper going like, ah.
I do that all the time. I go to strip clubs on my anniversary.
I don't think that's so weird.
No.
My favorite, when the guy comes to tell him, hey, you got to come back. You got to do one more mission. You got to get Stavros. You're the only guy that knows him. And he's like, okay, I'll do it. And then that guy goes back, the company man, whatever. He goes back and he gets in his car. Stavros is in the car waiting for him and says,
I didn't understand.
He says, I left a little something for you in the back as he exits the car and it's a bomb. And the guy starts to freak out and then locks himself in the car.
Yeah, locks himself in the car.
He locks himself in the car.
Like, it's a panic. It's a panic. And
how could Stavros have counted on that? The guy could have, if the guy wasn't a dummy, he could have just easily gotten away.
He's a grade A klutz. He knew it, and that was part of the plan.
They show his elbow accidentally pushing down the lock of the car.
I may be mistaken, but I thought the bomb said he had 60 seconds to get out of there.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah, and you know what happens? It goes off in like 13 seconds.
Yeah.
It's like 59, 58, boom.
Here's my question. Why did Stavros set that all up? Like, I didn't understand what he was setting up.
He wanted to get Van Damme back in the game.
Yes.
He used this guy to get him, and then he blows up the guy because the guy doesn't have power locks. And so he knew that this guy drove a Honda Civic Value.
Oh, wait a minute. I have a question about that then. So did Stavros hire that guy to motivate Van Damme back in the game?
No, I have no idea.
Stavros is orchestrating this whole thing. Stavros is like, I need to show my face to get Van Damme back in the game because I need to get my revenge on Van Damme for stealing my giant vat of plutonium. And so he just knows this is going on. So I think that killing the government agent is sort of like what Stavros does. It's neither here nor there.
Oh, okay. The guy wasn't working for Stavros.
He was upset.
Yeah.
Now, so the plan to kill Stavros is that Stavros is going to show up at an amusement park on the rainiest night of the year. Clearly,
it hasn't stopped anyone else from showing up at an amusement park.
It is a packed night. By the way, this movie, if there's ever been a movie where there's animal cruelty, I know we've seen it in the past in different films, this one definitely takes the cake. We'll get to a lion later or a tiger.
By the way, how about the way the movie deals with both animals and babies?
Babies are a lot of babies, a lot of babies and bombs,
and women too.
A lot of women get killed, and you know what? Here's the thing: like, there's this big shoot. They meet up at this amusement park to kill Stavros. He won't take the shot because Stavros' son is there. But then a shootout happens, and the son gets killed, and then
everybody gets killed.
But then everyone gets, but people are still riding rides. Like people are like still strapping in a ride, standing in line for rides. Like, oh, look at that gunshot.
Wherever they are, mayhem explodes. Like when they're in Rome in the big square where there's a wedding going on, wedding patrons are just being mowed down by machine gun fire.
And there's a lot of shots of women. This is at the amusement park and at the wedding where women are being killed from behind.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of women die from gunshot wounds to the back. And
well, they're running away. They're running away and they get shot in the back by, like, just crossfire.
Yeah. That's just not something you see every day.
No, just lie down. That's why I was like, just lie down. Why are you still standing in line for the Tilt-A-Whirl?
My favorite thing before they get to the amusement park is when we have the Dennis Rodman introduction.
Oh, wow. Yes. Let's just play it and we can talk about it. This is going to be a Rodman banter, some classic Rodman banter.
Who are you?
I'm the man.
You?
I hope you don't judge a person by the way they look. I hate that.
Who does your hair? Siegfried or Roy?
The last guy made fun of my hair. He's still trying to put his hair out of his ass.
I don't want to know about your sex life.
Well, this has been fun. Now, who the hell are you?
Jack Quinn.
The energy is exploding.
It's almost like the director was like, okay, between sentences and between exchanges, I want you to take a full beat.
Yeah.
So we really want to lengthen this out. We really want to, they're punctuated by silence.
I don't want to give anyone some real, how their relationship grows, but like what I notice is that their relationship starts with indifference towards each other. And then as the movie gets farther along, they're still indifferent. They're just standing closer to each other. They're still at the same indifference. They never connect at all.
I have to say, why does he ask about his sexuality?
Well, I feel like in this era, it was sort of like, because we're introduced to Dennis Rodman getting like a belly button piercing.
And his hair is all crazy and he's covered in tattoos. And
so that's just a homophobic remark.
Yeah, well, I think that was like a big, like Rodman at the time, like how his style on the court and everything was very questionable. Was very like he was in the Madonna sex book. Yes. There was a lot of stuff going on.
And in a very stuffy American agent like Jack Paul Quinn.
Yeah. American guy.
Is not going to stand for someone like Yaz. That is Dennis Rodman's character's name, Yaz. And
Dennis Rodman did a fine job.
Wow. What now?
Rodman is a basketball player.
Yes.
Are you sure? Yes. For what he had to do in this film, I thought he did a fine job.
I thought he
did a fine job.
There's that scene when he knows that Jack Paul Quinn is dangerous, and he's like, I don't know. And then he like touches a wall with his hand, and then it's just all dialogue from the back, like from the back of his head, like, I know you're dangerous. And then it cuts to him. But what the hell? I like danger. It's like, he just changes his mind on a dime.
By the way, I have a bigger issue with the writing because I didn't understand why all of a sudden he was joining forces with Jack.
Made no sense.
No incentive.
But by the way,
because
Jack,
it was a family, because his son was in danger.
But first of all, let's even get to the reason why they even meet is suspect. Jack Paul Quinn works for the government. He's doing a government hit. Why does he have to go to some weird arms dealer to get weapons? Like, this is a government hit,
right?
Well,
he's working. He says he's working for the good guys now. So I assume he was like, Van Damme's contact in Antwerp. He's like he's working with the CIA or the whoever it is.
I mean, but he also looks like he's probably selling weapons because he like has a room that's like Victoria's Secret or something. It's like Betty Page shop. It's like black and white pictures of like women in lingerie that you press, the doors open, and there's just tons of weapons inside.
Yeah. Weapons that they have no problem setting off in the very small room. They're just shooting stuff, bombs, throwing grenades, like crazy.
I gotta just say, generally throughout the movie, no police ever come. There's buildings exploding. There's never a fire truck, never an ambulance, never police. No policeman's ever like, what's that going on around the corner? Was that an explosion? It's just like, they get to do whatever they want. When they're in the hospital,
it's Europe.
There's not
people
even a doctor.
Cool over there. There's a lot of hospitals in this movie. A
lot of hospitals.
And there's no hospital staff at night.
There's none.
Ever.
It's like they all go home at 5.
They're just babies crying alone. There's no nurse watching.
Empty building.
And they also turn off the lights, it seems like, in these hospitals.
Apparently.
Too. Like, all right, well, we'll keep the babies in the nursery. Just shut off the lights. They'll be back in the
Don't hook them up to any monitors. Just let them roam around free in their baby bins.
But again, I want to go back to Dennis Rodman. Like, so again, we're led to believe that Jean-Claude Van Damme is an expert. And, you know, like the James Bond, and he just casually pulls a grenade pin. He's like, oh, what's this? Like, he's worked with grenades, we would assume. Like,
well, this is some sort of, like, James Bondy kind of doesn't look like a grenade.
Gold ring or something. Oh, okay. But still, like, they never show what it is exactly. Like, you never get a clear shot of, like, wait, what did he just do? Like, it's almost like so much was done off camera. It's like, just pretend that you did something.
Hey, don't we want to get an insert shot of the thing that he's pulling? No. It's just a big pen. We didn't invent a thing. We didn't make a thing.
To me, I felt like...
pizzas arrived on set. We're going to go eat the pizzas now.
I feel like it is, honestly, like everyone did one take, and they were all drunk and hungover from the night before partying. Because when you look at Van Damme, like, he has bags. Like, he looks better now than he did in this movie. Like, I feel like this is at the height of just, like, I'm drinking, I'm partying, I'm doing coke.
This whole thing feels like a tax shelter write-off. Like, that producers were renting out their own locations that they owned and just getting a tax rebate. And it just felt like, yeah, you know what? I'll do this, you know? But, you know, nothing matters. It's not like it's not like they went out to make a movie. They went to, like, save money on taxes, international taxes, by making a movie.
And I want to talk about, like, when they're also planning the mission to assassinate Mickey Rourke. Have we said that Mickey Rourke is the bad guy?
Yeah, Mickey Rourke is Stavros.
And this is before he's got all crazy in the face.
But he has an American accent.
Yes.
He doesn't put on any kind of foreign accent.
It's
and
a weird Stavros.
He's Stavros. And Jean-Claude Van Damme is Jack Quinn.
They should have switched the name.
Which is the craziest part.
Yeah, with a full Eastern European accent.
Here's the question. Now, is he named Jack Quinn so that American audiences can relate to him?
Yes.
Even though he's European? Or is it for European audiences to celebrate an American hero played by a European?
No, I think...
I think his name was Jack Quinn in the script, and... Yeah.
And I think they probably wanted Sylvester Stallone, or they wanted somebody, Bruce Willis, and they didn't get him, and they got JCVD, and they were like, you know what? Fuck it.
Yeah.
Don't change it.
Like,
doesn't
as they're
matter.
Handing out the sides for the day, the script for the day, the actor's like, oh, we didn't change. Oh, it doesn't matter.
But they're setting up this assassination at one point in the movie. And they have, like, you remember in Back to the Future at the end when, like, Doc Brown makes, like, that incredibly detailed map? And he's like, okay, you'll go down Main Street and then you hit the thing. They also have a map exactly like that, like a three-dimensional map of an amusement park. Like, to just be, like, a sniper hit?
Yeah.
Like, there's no need for building 3D models.
They have models. Yeah. They have scale models of all the rides.
Like Back to the Future style. They have a Ferris wheel. Like, the Ferris wheel's not coming into play. Like, why do they need this?
And I have to say, I kind of wish that Jack Quinn had shot Stavros' son. Because we didn't see who shot him.
No.
So for us, though, wait, the whole thing is predicated on, like, revenge now.
Well, what's weird, too, is that
he didn't shoot him.
Yeah, Jack Quinn could have just shot Stavros.
Yes.
And game over,
that's
done.
It. A quick shot.
But he hesitates, and because he hesitates, hundreds and hundreds of people die, apparently.
And no one ever gets in trouble. There's no sense of... Like, oh, that's fine. You know, it's like, it's such a botched crime. But you're going to go to this, now you're going on vacation for the rest of your life. You just botched that. Hundreds of people died. Have fun.
Take care.
That gunfire, I would say, is going off. That whole sequence is like 10 minutes long.
Of everyone. Yeah, because it starts in an amusement park and goes into a hospital.
Thing. Yeah.
Well, because they're all hopped up on cotton candy and funnel cake. I want to talk about also the reveal of the child. They're like, okay, he's making contact. Stavros is making contact.
Who's that woman?
And the child is underneath her rain poncho. Like, as if... I don't know if
the child is like 5.
But again, he's revealed by her lifting up her skirt, and a child walks out.
Why, if he's going to see... Yeah, why wouldn't the child just be there the whole time?
I mean, isn't it the whole
What's
thing
that... What's the value of her hiding a child in an amusement park?
Because of the rain?
get him his own poncho.
They're, everybody's riding rides. Everybody, you know what I mean?
No one's fine with the rain.
No one stopped.
And by the way,
do you think they wrote the rain into it?
No,
or it
I think they only
raining?
Had that amusement park that yes. night, and okay. it happened to be raining.
And they just get a close up on this tiger. A wet tiger looks like the saddest, sickest.
Oh
thing.
Yeah.
They have a long shot of this tiger pacing. But now, if the meeting was for Stavros to meet up with his family, wasn't he prepared? Like, oh, I might see his like wife and kid. I'm going to get yeah. nervous. Like. That
he's,
was
he's not meeting like a contact at the amusement park, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like it makes no sense. And then he doesn't kill him, and then Stavros is the one who starts shooting. He's the one who starts shooting everybody.
Yeah,
wait, but here's this is the part of the movie that I really was like, holy shit, this just passed into a new level of crazy, which was Stavros is talking to his son and the mother. And he looks over at the tiger, and the tiger looks up to where Van Damme
yes.
is.
Yes! Yeah, the tiger gives it away.
The tiger tips him off. The tiger is a wild animal in a cage that's like, hey, bro, look up there.
Have you ever seen Madagascar? These tigers are smart.
It was the fuck. I was like, wait, does the tiger work for Stavros? This is ludicrous. And of course, Stavros pulls out a gun and starts, and instantly in one shot, shoots the sniper girl.
Yes. Yeah.
The one who said she could...
shoot the dick off
dick
a hummingbird.
Right.
And she gets
amazing.
Shot through. I love these kind of shots where they shoot through the sniper lens
yeah.
and it goes like through her eye. Like
yeah.
it's like the shot is so precise.
Oh, that was we skipped over that. That was a great scene where they're planning in the scene with the map, the
yeah.
map of
oh,
the
yeah.
amusement park. The two things, the two lines we just said one that I loved, which was I can shoot the dick off a hummingbird.
It was delivered so beautifully.
So great.
So
but
amazing.
Then the other one was the entrance is like one of the other guys brings Van Damme in and he's like, gentlemen, this is Delta One, forget you ever saw him. I was like, well, he's still right there. We're all going to spend the rest of the day talking to him. Like, what do you mean forget you ever saw him? It was...
I couldn't stop thinking about those actors because as soon as I saw them, I'm like, oh, they're all going to die or we're never going to see them again. I'm like, oh, they're probably all staying in a hostel somewhere.
Yeah.
They're not getting... They're just local hired.
Yeah.
They're just standing there. They've been there all day.
If you would think... So they go in the amusement park. Then they get into a fight scene in a hospital where they're just throwing baby...
In a nursery.
Yeah.
They get
baby
into
carriages.
A fight in a nursery.
Where they're literally... They're tossing babies in and out at each other.
Yeah.
And like, you know, essentially Jack Paul Quinn is not going to let a baby, you know, get in the middle of it.
I love that another grenade that goes off in that elevator. And then he pushes the baby out of the way. And the baby is unharmed, even though there's flames going all around him. And like knocked him out. But then the baby's like...
this whole thing ends with Stavros getting away... The explosion from the grenade has knocked Jack Quinn out,
mm-hmm.
and then he wakes up.
This is where I jumped off the couch and went, "What? What are we watching?" Yeah. Continue.
He wakes up in the colony, which, for those of you who've seen the 1960s television show The Prisoner,
yes,
felt an awful lot like The Prisoner.
Oh, it was such a direct ripoff of The Prisoner, and. And at this point, you're just like, what is...
Made no sense. I was like, what is this groovy place for middle-aged men?
So they live... So basically...
What's weird about it is, like, it made no sense, but it was also my favorite part of the movie.
It was like the Oakwood...
I wish the whole movie was that.
Yeah, it was
colony.
Like an Oakwood Apartments for, like, ex-spies. Yeah. It was just
It was all spies who have presumably been killed in battle. Like,
right.
The best
right.
of the best.
And, like from KGB, CIA,
oh, yes,
FBI,
exactly. From everywhere. Yeah, But now they all work for the colony, which is a top-secret spy organization that monitors the world for global terrorism, and then they are the last line of defense between everything and absolute chaos.
Yeah,
right?
So, but they just analyze, because they're never on the field. They can't
No, they
ever
can't
have
leave
to.
The island.
They put on their virtual reality glasses and the very complicated system where they have to keep their hand down. Like, they're in this, like, Dr. Strangelove war room where they're watching, you know, they're getting feeds from everybody, but they have to keep their hand in one place at all time, which made no sense to me.
I just felt like that's a place. I don't want, trust those guys to stop terrorism. It looks like everyone's, it's like happy hour all the time on a cruise ship. It's like.
Well, it's like, yeah, it's like a Mediterranean island is what it looks like.
Beautiful.
It was like, that's where they shot Mamma Mia or something.
Yeah, it exactly looked like that. Their pool looked like that.
Yeah.
It's basically Santorini.
And they go like this, and they say, like, they get him, like, you know, he wakes up, he's in this room, it's like, hey, hit this button if you want to live. And he hits the button, and then he's like brought into this Dr. Strangelove room, and he hasn't even gotten up to speed on what is even happening.
Oh, no, he's still like, covered in bandages.
And they're like, Jack, figure this out, or we're going to kill you. He's like, wait a second. Like, just, like, give him a little bit of time to catch up here.
I loved when he's got there's a great, like, there's an introduction to all the ex-spies that are there, and he's like, oh my god, you're this guy, you died in this thing, and oh my god, you're this guy, and he goes to one guy, oh my god, you died in Lebanon, and he goes, Beirut, actually, and I'm like, Beirut's in Lebanon.
Yeah,
that is. Here's my question:
Beirut is a city in Lebanon.
Why
isn't it?
You died in America.
Have I lost my mind?
No, you are. Right. Yeah.
But my question is why does the colony take these guys at certain points? Like, why did they take Jack Quinn
because he failed
that particular
because he failed his mission?
Well, that was his punishment.
I didn't understand
his punishment for letting Stavros go was going to the island.
They show that little video before they say, if you want to live, push the button. They show him the video that says, you could have killed Stavros, you didn't, and so your mission was a failure. It's your fault. So now if you want to live, you're going to have to work it off, basically. So
I would have liked to see the guy making that video too, just in After Effects.
So everybody who's in there has failed at some sort of mission in the
They've all been killed, or they've all been, quote unquote, killed.
They've all failed. I think they've all failed.
Yeah, they all failed, or they've, retired. And then there's that one guy.
They don't justify who put this together, though.
Oh,
like,
no.
Who's in charge?
It's probably the Illuminati, right, guys?
But, you know, there's that one guy, I forget, like, he hates him, and you're sort of like, oh, of course he is. But, like, why? They never say, it's just like,
because.
They used to be bad guys together.
No, because Jack Quinn says, I thought I killed him blah, blah, blah. So that guy hates him because Jack Quinn came very close to killing him.
Now,
it's like now they all are supposed to get along.
Now everybody's bros.
Now it seems to me like he has been.
By the way, there are no lady spies.
No,
lady
not.
Spies. It's all. It's like a real sausage fest on this island.
And for the most part, no spies under 60. But,
they're all old. They're all old, like, and they're all, like, it looks upper like crusty, they seem.
Yeah. It looks like, you know, like a place where the character from Sexy Beast would be, like, hanging out, like, it's all these, like...
Oh, Ben Kingsley's character, or Ray Winston?
Yeah.
Well, it's just like it's a Tommy Bahama commercial. They're all just, like, chilling.
They're
it's
all in leisure wear.
It's like magic hour. It's like, you know, they got loafers on. They're like, oh, let's go solve some crimes.
There's one guy, while they're in the Dr. Strangelove room, like, hooked up to all the computers, like, looking at the footage of a downed plane or something, and there's one guy who's wearing like a green checked golf jacket. I was like, what the fuck is this? Does everybody get to choose their own garbage clothes? Come on.
They get to wear whatever they want. They're getting their leisure time. Now now this is where I'm confusing the timeline, because it seems like, all right, he has, this is again an ADR moment. He has failed in the assassination attempt. It's been more than 36 hours. He wakes up on this island. He solves a case. He seems to be on this island for a couple of days. And then you cut to that same rainy night where his wife is like outside by the pool. She runs in and answers the phone. It's like, hey, we want to buy your sculpture. And she's like, okay. But you could tell that
in the
movie.
I don't think that's the same rainy night.
I think what it is.
Really?
What I think it was is they ADR'd the phone conversation. They're like, your husband has been killed. Because she starts bursting out in tears. Like, she's crying.
And
I think they were like, oh, we got to, like, figure out how to get her to, like, roam.
Now here's the big question. Was there a script? Was there a script, do you think? Or did they just, like, oh, we have this location. What are we doing? Because that the way you're talking about it, like, it makes sense now. You're like, yeah, it doesn't. Nothing.
No,
makes
the things don't add up. I think he was on the colony for months.
That's what I think too, because he had to, because he was shaving off his fingerprints.
Sorry, I can't. Oh,
that was
go back to that.
But his face was so emotional. When he was,
wait a minute, what?
When he was peeling off his fingerprints.
I had a really hard time with it.
When he was used the razor.
Yeah, no, you really had a problem with that, huh, Jen?
Yes,
I couldn't look at it myself.
I could not look at that.
He takes an X-Acto knife and cuts off his thumbprint.
Yes,
but he has no. If you look at his face, it's completely emotionless. It's just like bum ba dum bum bum. He's just like bum ba bum. This doesn't hurt. This doesn't. This is not weird to me. me at all. I'm just like,
and he like. He perfectly, it's like in Goodfellas when they're in prison making the, like, shaving with a razor blade, the garlic, so that it's so thin that it must, and he does that to his thumb, like the thinnest layer of just his thumbprint. It's perfect.
I gotta just, let's just talk about, can I just talk about the fancy hotel room workout?
Oh my God.
Like, I was like.
That was amazing.
This is insane. Like, it's just like a Pilates cigarette smoking whiskey. Pre-masturbation workout.
There's like a tub lift.
Yeah, the tub lift. Like, ah. I was like, what is this guy doing?
It was such a great sequence, though. I loved all of it.
Wait, what?
I loved it. I loved the training montage? I loved the training montage.
The self-training montage. By the way, why did he even need to... I mean, I guess he needs to
self-train. Because he was injured.
Oh, okay. So he's
I think because he was so injured that he needed to get himself back in fighting shape.
They get him shirtless a lot in this movie,
The thing was, he knew he had to get out of there... He was already sort of devising the plan to get out.
Well, that's
because it's so difficult to get out of there.
Yeah, he realizes he needs to get off the island. And by the way,
it wasn't that difficult. All he did was jump off a cliff, swim to the thing, and hold on. That was it. Like,
shave off a fingerprint.
Oh, yeah. And get that thing that hit. Yeah. And then we got to talk about. I mean,
I'm very excited if you bring up. I'm bringing it.
He's swimming underwater because he jumps off this cliff and he's got to swim to this raft to get on this the plane, the cargo plane to get out. And the guy who doesn't like him, we talked about before, swims up behind him. How did he know he was escaping?
In full scuba gear.
With full scuba gear, where the lasers are happening and all that kind of stuff, because there's lasers that prevent you from swimming.
Well, but the lasers have been turned off.
A bag.
He puts a bag over his head, which would give him air. It would give him air underwater. You don't strangle underwater, but, oh, this is great. Thank you for the air. No, it's like he's already doesn't have air, so you're giving him more air.
Well, what I thought and realized later I was wrong was what the upper crusty British guy tells Van Damme when he gets there is if somebody tries to escape, the guardian is assigned to go and get them. Yes. Everybody has a guardian.
Again, that would come into play. I mean, we'll get to how it comes into play.
But I immediately thought, his nemesis guy, the tall blonde Dolph Lundgren guy, must be his guardian, and that's why he's showing up with the scuba gear, and he's going to get him. In fact, not the case.
Nope, not at all.
That guy just happens to be in the ocean scuba gearing?
He would have to know that because there's these just
lasers.
There's lasers there that prevent you from swimming, and they turn it off for that clock when the plane comes so they can get the shipment. But so that guy had to go, all right, I scuba dive for 5 minutes a day in between laser stuff.
Yeah, when the lasers come, I go down.
My recreation.
Who was his guardian?
The
upper crust British guy.
Belloc from Raiders.
Now, which was awesome. I want to also just bring up, and we'll mention it later when it really comes into play, but Coke definitely was a sponsor of this movie.
Oh, you think?
Because Coke plays a very pivotal role in the escape, but even a better pivotal role
in the finale.
Oh,
okay. And it also plays a role in a fight sequence.
Yes,
with the
Coke
cans.
Coke is the hero in this film.
Oh, yeah.
Coke in Europe, I mean, well, I guess it's true, it's a lot in Europe, I guess, but Jean-Claude Van Damme's character definitely drinks Coke, uses Coke a lot.
And we're not talking about cocaine, guys.
You should
be. Coca-Cola.
Now he's off the island. He escapes. They don't really show you how he gets off. Oh, yeah, he holds the plane hostage.
Yeah.
And then he gets to land it.
That was the craziest. That escape, like, it just made no sense. They knew they had to add one more thing of jeopardy, but it just... I think that at a certain point, they're like, yeah, I don't care. You know, just put him in gear and have him die this way. Like,
and there's question. No thought. Because now I feel like we're at maybe halfway through the movie.
I don't know if we're even halfway.
Okay, well, I feel like it's just once we get to the end of the colony, that's sort
of. Yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
Why is this movie Midpoint called Double Team?
Wait a second.
Hold on.
Because you got two guys. There's two in one. They're
because him and Rodman become like a team up.
Yeah. And that could have been called this team up. This is my problem. That happens.
Oh, they also fuck that girl together.
Late in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh,
this
yeah.
This movie is not a two-hander.
It's not.
With Rodman and Van Damme.
If it wasn't Rodman, you probably wouldn't. He wouldn't have been on the poster.
It really is. It's only the last 30 minutes of the movie
that they.
That Rodman and Van Damme are a team. The first hour of the movie is just a Rodman, a Van Damme nonsense festival.
Well, here's a question. Do you think that they were like, this is going to be really exciting that Dennis Rodman is doing the picture?
Oh, yes.
And they were like super fired up.
We're going to let him wear whatever he wants.
He's a three-peat. Everyone loves him. He's a winner. And then they just saw what kind of actor he was and like, all right, cut him out of this, and let's just make this a Jean-Claude Van Damme picture because it's like...
No, I think what it is they were like, we want Dennis Rodman. Let's shoehorn him into something. Like, there was no way that.
That's what I think.
There was no way there was like a guy named Yaz.
Yeah,
like,
there was a wrote... script that.
Oh, really?
Yes, that there was just his journey, Jack Quinn's journey to get his son and whatever, and then they shoehorn Rodman in.
I think Rodman is so
because
like.
Because he has no motivation to join this.
No.
Not at all.
Can like he does have the family motivation, but that comes after he says, "What the hell motivation?"
Yes,
where he's like, and there's previously there's the money motivation
because he's like, "This is a picture of my the sonogram of my baby."
But why does Rodman care about that?
Because he's like a fucking respectable dude.
let me ask you guys this.
Why didn't you tell me that first?
Yeah,
I'm in.
Well, I just would love to talk about the fact that Dennis Rodman does speak in basketball terms, and they speak to him in basketball terms.
They parachute
a basketball player. As if he is a basketball player.
They parachute in a giant basketball.
Yeah. What
they
was jump, that?
They jump
it's
out.
His invention.
His invention is a basketball parachute.
It's his invention that he didn't want to go like Van Damme pushed him down into it. It was like, I don't want to do my own invention. And it's so weird because he's not a basketball player. He's a basketball player who's playing an arms dealer. So why would this guy love basketball references?
No.
It doesn't. But so many of his one-liners are like basketball zingers.
Here, listen to this one.
Oops, air ball. You need practice, man.
I hate practice, but I never miss twice, brother.
Didn't he get in trouble for skipping practice?
That was his whole thing. It's all like inside jokes about him not going to
totally.
Practice.
The weird thing, though, about that parachute, the basketball parachute, is that it doesn't actually. It looks like a basketball, but then when it lands,
it doesn't bounce or anything.
Yeah,
it just kind of opens up like an egg.
I thought it was going to bounce, and I was excited about that.
And then Jean-Claude Van Damme leaves him in the field. And he's just like, he pushes him down, but they don't work together. He's like, I'll see. Go back to Antwerp as soon as they land. He says, "Go back to Antwerp." Why push him out of a plane if you're not even going to take him with you? He's like, "See you in Antwerp." And he's like, "Hey." And then this is what I tried. I rewound this scene a few times just because I didn't know what was going on. I was like, well, where is he? Where is he going? Whose house is this? I was like, is that Stavros' house? He never says. I was like, what point is this? It's just, he just goes to a house and he sees a baby.
No, that's his house. That's his South of France train house.
That was the train house.
He
was going to see his wife.
That was the train house?
Yes. Yeah.
They blew up?
Yeah. He thought his wife, he thought she had the baby already.
Oh. No, he thought she would be there because he was trying to figure out what happened because Stavros
said he had the butterfly.
When they're in the colony, there's a terrorism act, and one of the pictures Van Damme zooms in on, and Stavros has left him a message spray painted on the wall. It says, "Q, I have your butterfly." And but Van Damme doesn't say anything to anybody, and that's what prompts him to escape.
Is a giant like that's a very elaborate plan that he's going to graffiti on one wall.
Why does Stavros think he's still alive?
Stavros knows he's in the colony? That makes no sense.
Is that real?
He never says anything about that. And how does Yaz know about the colony? Because he's like, remember when he meets up with Stavros and talks about his kids? Yeah, I mean, he meets up with Yaz. Yaz is like, I don't even believe in the colony. It's like, well, how do you even know about the colony? It doesn't even make sense. Like, why are you bringing it up? Like, no one asked you. No one asked you about the colony, Yaz.
Well, so he goes to the house, though, to see if his wife is still there.
I guess
there.
That makes sense, because I was like, what baby is this?
That's what I thought,
too. Because his baby wasn't born, but I guess that makes sense.
But that was an elaborate plan.
And
to
that
get
crazy nanny?
That was How about scary.
He really
that was
is?
Scary.
He doesn't want to shoot that woman who is just straight up shooting at him.
She set up a bomb to kill him, and then she shoots at him, and then she stops shooting at him for a while. Remember, he like shoots the other guys, and then it's like nothing's happening, and then he gets shot at again, like she would stop shooting.
Here's the deal. Like, when people are shooting at you, like, even if it's a woman, you're allowed to shoot her.
Yeah. She's 100%. Paid.
James Bond has done it.
And not only that,
but she looks like a zombie.
Yeah. She weirdly looked like she was in like some sort of like hypnotic state.
And what's the deal with...
Right, why? I mean, she was
in shock from the explosion.
From the explosion?
Yeah.
Oh. But it wasn't just her... Like, I know what you're saying. Like, she looked a little charred, but her eyes, she was playing a zombie.
She looked a little charred. She was slightly singed.
How about the grenade that goes in a pool and all of a sudden it's the biggest explosion you've ever seen out of a pool.
There are no fewer than 15 grenades thrown in this movie, and depending on the location, they either make a very small explosion or the big or like a Hiroshima level explosion.
Yeah, that one in the hospital like took up a whole hallway.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's just, it's a grenade. Go pop, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so bananas.
Can we talk about when Jean-Claude Van Damme goes undercover as like Jean Vaught, when he goes, like, he dresses like Robert Smith.
Oh,
that was amazing.
Yeah.
Then, and you know, because he's sitting with all those goth people and he's got this, like, this frizzy, like, carrot top wig and these round sunglasses. Like, he's got a boombox on his shoulder. Like, I am just cool guy.
Oh, my God.
Jean-Claude Van Gogh. And with Dennis Rodman in a zoot suit, kind of like, he looks like when the fox in Warner Brothers cartoons gets dressed up to go out. Like,
how about when they steal a mini and Dennis Rodman's head sticks out the top, like it, like a Mr. Bean cartoon or not cartoon, Mr. Bean thing.
Can we? Yeah,
what was that about?
That was just like they're just having a good time on set. I think they're like, let's just play. There's something that whole setup in the park in Rome when like, because it's like every agent is going to be there.
Yeah.
That the way they set that up, he's like, "What is your plan?" And Jean-Claude Van Damme says, "I have no idea, but I'm going to let Stavros do what he thinks that I'll do, and then I will be there when he does it." But it's like the most vague. It's like a kid trying to get out of
okay,
trouble.
Okay, so then Van Damme says,
"Are you going to send him an email message?" Yes.
And then he does on that device, whatever that was. And then it says on the top, fax.
But now, wait, here's the other thing, too. Again, Jean-Claude Van Damme, we've seen him not take the shot when he has the shot.
Yeah.
We've seen him accidentally launch a grenade. He's touching too many things. And now we see him see his wife, and the only thing he needs to do is not make a giant scene and go, my wife, and run across the square and blow the entire mission. And he does that. Like, why? Why?
Because he's just so emotional, I guess.
His wife is giving birth.
Who was the man on horseback shooting a machine gun?
Made no sense.
Some sort of, like, period garb? Who was that man?
It was impossible to figure out. Yeah, but it was impossible to figure out who anybody was and who they worked for. Everyone was just shooting at anyone. You're like, is that a bad guy? Is that a bad guy?
It was never clear to me who were good guys and who were bad guys.
And by the good guys were girls who were shot in the back. You know, they were like, oh, that poor person.
Yeah, and the bridal party.
Yeah.
And we've never, so far, we're back in the movie. We're not even engaging in the idea that he's being hunted down by his guy who was trying to kill him from the colony. Like, that is not really...
But that's barely present.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you would think that that would be...
Oh, right. That only comes back at the very end.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you would think that that would be a motivator throughout the second act or whatever.
Director's cut.
And, you know, the guy does follow him, but he doesn't do anything.
No.
He just sort of, like, follows him. He goes, there he is. Yeah.
Until they, spoiler alert, blow up the Colosseum.
Right.
Then he's there to be like...
Well, okay. So even...
Get out of here. That's what it says. Get out of here.
This is my big problem. So I'm not sure when this happens, but he somehow gets to the hotel that his wife had been staying at or, you know, under Stavros' watch. And he finds a label?
Prescription bottle.
No, it's not a bottle. It's a label that's...
Stuck on the mirror.
It's on a window.
Mirror. It's a label that's stuck on a mirror that says Pitocin.
Right.
So I guess this is what I was trying to understand. Did they do that on purpose to draw him out to the hospital?
I'm assuming.
Because Stavros put it there.
But they also had to figure out what hospital had given women Pitocin in the last, like...
Oh, but who did they go to figure that out?
Oh, the brothers, right?
Cyber monks. And, like, when you're watching, when you buy it on iTunes and are watching it, all the little chapters are titled.
Yeah.
This chapter is titled Cyber Monks.
Well, I wish it was Cyber Brothers, because the entire time Dennis Rodman's like, my brothers are going to help us out. Yeah. My brothers. And then you realize they actually are brothers, like Franciscan brothers.
Because they are monks.
And they learn how to fist bump. That's the cutest thing. They learn how to fist bump. And then he says, we use the internet. And Dennis Rodman, like, rolls his eyes like, isn't this crazy to use the internet?
And by the way, their internet setup is akin to, like, the Adam West Batman computer setup. Yeah. It is giant. And it is just massive.
Before we continue on with cyber monks, when he finds the Pitocin label, he then gets into a fight with a gentleman who has a switchblade in his foot?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's how he just holds a switchblade with his foot.
I couldn't figure that out for the life of me. Like, you've got a switchblade. Cool, man. Use it in your hand.
And he jumps. And that's what he does. He, like, jumps out of his shoes.
Yes.
And then his shoes go crazy, and Jean-Claude Van Damme's like, what the hell? And then he goes, psh, So he had it in his shoe.
Yes.
Holding it in his shoe in his thing. That's very uncomfortable.
But that's also a James Bond thing, because James Bond used to fight a woman who had a dagger in her shoe, and she would.
But this is on his
in
foot.
The shoe. Well, I get foot. This right. was he yeah, was he was oh, holding right, yeah. a switchblade with between his toes.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I guess
true.
We're to understand My that he's better with a switchblade by foot. That
you know
he's
what?
Got
I don't know that that's true.
It.
I don't know that that's possible.
But again, who made that decision?
Dead silence. Dead
Someone
silence.
Had to go, you need to hold this I bet it was the in guy. Between your feet.
I bet it was the stuntman who was like, you know what I can actually do?
I can put this in between my feet.
I could put this in my feet.
And the director's like, yeah, fuck it, let's do it.
And then the other thing that was strange about it was there's a guy in the hallway who has an El Mariachi-style suitcase gun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Then I was like, this has already been done, fella. Like, we've already seen El Mariachi.
Well, no, not at this point.
Yeah.
And then he shoots.
What,
yeah,
it's 97?
Yeah, I think
okay.
so.
Okay.
El Mariachi's got
to
shoots
everything, and then the bellboy downstairs looks up, and then he goes, I'm going to call the police. And he goes, are you sure? Is there something like, are you sure? He goes, yeah, I'm just going to call the police.
Yeah.
It's just, like, so casual. And no police
now,
come.
My question is, so his wife is with... has been given Pitocin to
induce labor.
Induce labor and is on her that, due date. That's the big thing.
Is Mickey Rourke going to take the baby and then immediately kill it? Is that what we are led to believe?
I think...
Or just take it as his own?
See, this I think is, he's going to take it. This is the thing about Mickey Rourke's motivation. A part of me thought he may take this baby because he wants a son.
Oh, I think he's just using the baby as bait to draw out.
I agree.
Because he's going to kill Van Damme. Like, he wants, I think he ultimately wants to kill the baby and make Van Damme know the feeling
That's what
he
I
th- feels.
Even though Van Damme didn't kill his
he
son.
He blames no. Van Damme for the death of his okay. son. Yeah,
he,
for
doesn't,
sure.
he doesn't give a Van Damme what.
Oh, boy.
So there's a doctor.
I can't believe it took us this long.
There's a doctor who's taking care of Van Damme's wife. Who for some
a lady
reason,
doctor, yeah. which
a lady doctor
in the 90s is almost unheard of.
Sure. Who for some reason becomes a good guy.
Yeah, I couldn't figure that out either.
I couldn't figure out if she was like in on it or she was like a real doctor, and because it's so vague, and I was just like, what is going on? Is she in good hands or is she not in good hands?
There's so many.
Well,
he
I think
leaves.
Ultimately, she was in good hands with her.
His plan, Stavros's plan, is terrible. You know, like, there's so many, like, completely circumstantial and coincidental things that have to happen in order for it to actually come to fruition. Like, right after this, when he takes off with the baby, Van Damme catches up with his wife, the doctor turns nice and saves the wife's life, but then Van Damme chases him to the Colosseum, and in the Colosseum, Mickey Rourke's setup is, there's a man versus tiger fight. He's going to say to Van Damme, you have to fight this tiger,
oh, yeah.
but there's a minefield. So the floor of the Colosseum is a minefield, and you're going to fight this tiger. Now, if you're Stavros, can't you assume the tiger is going to step on a mine? The tiger doesn't know to
no,
avoid the
this
mine.
This tiger is the one that kind of let him. He
oh, I agree. I know
with
that.
The tiger is very smart.
The tiger, I didn't even think about that. The tiger would have no idea where a mine is.
It doesn't matter. The tiger could very easily have been like, walk, 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 explode. Okay, that's over.
Well, how did Dennis Rodman move the explosives without blowing them?
He didn't move the explosives. He just moved the little markers.
But he also, here's the thing, too. Like, at the end, spoiler alert, that the whole. One mine will explode the whole Colosseum.
Yes.
So Mickey Rourke, by being there, would die anyway if he
Van
stepped
Damme.
On.
That's a really good point.
And the crazy
that's
thing
a
is,
really good point.
I was waiting, and I don't want to give away the ending.
No,
right
please,
now,
let's stay over here.
We're there.
But it really is like I was waiting for him to Van Damme. It starts. The movie starts off. He's so happy with his wife and his child, and like, or that he's expecting a child. Then at the end, it's really like goodbye. Hey, Rodman, take care of take care of them. See ya. And he never reconnects with his wife and kid. No. That's the last you see of them. That was his whole
the
driving
one
force.
Thing he would love to.
That he wanted to do more than anything else. And he's like, all right, I'll see you later. And then it just ends with like Rodman with a burning Colosseum. They're probably going to blame me for this.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He goes, they're probably going to blame for me for this one too. Like two? Like what did they blame me for before?
For all the, because he's such a former Chicago
Bull. He also Rodman says to the colony guy, well, I guess it's my turn to disappear. And I thought that was Robin being like, take me to the colony.
Yeah.
And the guy's just like, ha ha, and drives off.
Yeah, he goes, smoke screen, and he throws down his coin.
Yeah, what was that about? Okay, I want to understand this. So upper crust British guy has a gun pointed at Van Damme at the end. And he is the guardian.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then Rod, but he says, I want a lock of your hair and your shirt. Is that because
he wants to bring it back to the colony and go, I killed him.
Okay, that's what he wants, right?
But
here's the thing. Then why does Rodman throw the smoke grenade?
Because he seems like he was going to let him go, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's the problem with the lock of hair and the shirt. At the colony, they seem to have video feed on every inch of the world.
And he already connected when he was with the Cybermonks. He already connected with them and said, thanks for looking out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love Jimmy or whatever. And then they like smile at each other like, yeah, he's a good guy. Like, wait, no one's planning on killing him. They're like helping him.
Yeah, the colony appears to be helping him except for the Guardian.
Well, maybe the Guardian is kind of helping him.
This is the weird thing about the colony. You know, it seems like for some people, it's a retirement community where they never want to leave and would never try to escape.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And then for others, I think if you go to the colony before your retirement age, it's a really tough place. But if you're...
you're ready to be retired.
But yeah, if you're like over 60, then like why not stay there?
They eat well. They're probably getting really nice dinner.
They've got that pool.
They got a pool. They got drinks. The weather seems great.
Permanent Club Med. Now, let me talk about one thing before we... And we got to wrap it up. But one thing that we got to talk about. When the Coliseum is exploding, the baby, Dennis Rodman, and Jean-Claude Van Damme are all saved by a Coke machine.
Yes. Right.
Several.
They hide behind a Coke machine.
It's the original nuking the fridge.
Exactly. It's the same move as Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull getting,
I was just like, this is so crazy. And here's something else. The baby's not crying. I gotta tell
you,
I have three kids. If I take a shit too loud, the baby's cries. You know, it's just like, that baby would be crying.
Hey, man, and you'd
be like,
you gotta quiet the shits down.
Oh, man, it's crazy.
They take a Moses.
I take a gyro poop.
Is it the noise you're making with your mouth or with your ass that's so loud?
It's really both. I'm trying to harmonize. I do have to pee sitting down or I'm gonna wake my baby. And it's so annoying. And this baby's just like so mellow as flames, hot. I mean,
the baby was shoved inside a brick wall at one point.
And the tiger almost eats the baby at one point.
Yes.
Yeah. Van Damme karate kicks that tiger. That looked pretty good, actually.
That was amazing. But by the way, this is the movie that I always want to see. Tigers have been kicked. People have been shot in the back. Children are assassinated. I mean, there was nobody on set going, maybe we should hold off on shooting the women. We shouldn't kill the kids. This is crazy.
I'll tell you what. When the tiger tipped off Mickey Rourke as to the location of Van Damme, that's when I was like, this movie is on a whole other level.
Listen to this Mickey Rourke monologue.
I'm going to give you a chance to save your son. If you live today, you'll get to know your son. And if you don't, I'll raise him as my own. You know, men are strong, Jack, but the tiger stronger.
I mean, that's basically his Oscar moment in many respects.
Oscar moment during the point of his career when he has to be in movies like this.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I got to say, when he realizes he's standing on that mine and he starts to, like, cry, like, he actually is playing that scene really well.
Yes,
like, his face, he's really doing it. And you know, like, Mickey's like, yeah, I'm doing this stupid movie. I just got to do it for money and I'm whatever. And it's just like, but he's also trying. He's trying to work.
By the way, he did do a serious martial arts regimen to have the physical appearance in the film in preparation for the fight.
Oh, I don't doubt it. He looked great.
Obviously, we had opinions about this movie, but there are other people who thought differently. So now it's time for Second Opinions. Second Opinions. That's right. These are 5-star reviews culled from Amazon. 5-star reviews of Double Team. Now, very rarely do we run into this problem where there are not many. There are only 4. And I picked the best 2 because even the 4 weren't even that good. I'll read the first one to you guys. This is from a review just by a customer. That's what happens when people don't put their full name in. I've seen most action films made in Hollywood since 80, but I've never seen one like this before. This film is an incredible miracle work. Intriguing plot, beautiful fight scenes, various camera works. Whether you're an action fan or not, you have to see this movie. I give it a 6 out of 5. The first time we've had a 6 out of 5.
Wow. Well, it seems to work for that movie that is 6 out of 5 because that makes no sense. So it works perfectly for that movie.
What does various camera works mean?
I think that the fact that they loaded the camera correctly, maybe.
They had very various camera angles. That's it. And I also like that he's seen most action films since 80. This is the one that is, it goes down into me the history of the most confounding 5-star review. Now, that was, you know, that was a 6-star review. This is a 5-star review. From April 11th, 1999, so it was not made recently. Yes, it was very nice and cool, but my parents... I'm going to read it again, sorry. Yes, it was very nice and cool, but my parents have a small house in the country. My dog has never seen to England, and I like videos and music. See you on Monday. Yours sincerely, John Romanski.
Wow, that, he's not even talking about the movie.
5-star review for Double Team. What has happened that this happened?
It's almost like he accidentally responded to an email or a Facebook post and in an Amazon review.
And it made him, yes, it was very nice and cool, but my parents have a small house in the country. My dog has never seen to England. I like videos and music. What does this mean? Well, I don't even understand.
He had like
what...
a couple websites going at the same time, like a couple pages up.
Yeah.
See you on Monday.
It was a cut and paste mistake.
Yeah.
I really feel, or this is the person who wrote the additional dialogue recording for Double Team, you know? Oh,
this was amazing. I'm very excited that we all got to talk about this. A big thank you to our very special guest, Owen Burke.
Thank you. Can I just say who the big winner
is
in Double Team? I wish I had thought of this earlier, and maybe, I don't know. The big winner for Double Team for me are the guys who worked in the studio where they did the ADR. Like, the overtime that these guys got.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know what? We can only see half of his face here. We can put in a whole paragraph right here.
They really did. If you really watch it, there was most of the dialogue is done in ADR. Even when you see their mouths moving, it's all dubbed. Like, these guys had put their kids through college. Yep. Their kids got braces. They got summer homes. They got that boat they always wanted. All from the ADR of this movie.
I 100% agree with you because also, here's the thing. The ADR in this movie is all plot. So I don't know what plot they actually shot. I feel like they just shot set pieces. But that being said, would you recommend this movie? I 100% say rent this. You will enjoy the hell out of it. It's awesome.
It's very watchable and enjoyable. Yeah.
It's very fun. It's like, you know that turn in a David Lynch movie where he changes realities? Like in Lost Highway, you're following one group of people, then another. In Mulholland Drive, you're following one group of people, then another. This is like that turn, that split second turn. That's the whole movie. You're just like, I don't know where I'm going with this.
But you are in for the ride. Thank you, guys. Big thank you to Owen Burke. You can listen to his podcast, Owen and TJ Read the News, right here on Earwolf. It's super hilarious.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm a huge fan of the show, so I really appreciate
amazing guest.
Having me. Thank you.
We can follow you on Twitter at
Owen Burke. I don't know.
That was it. Yeah, that was it.
It's at Owen Burke, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jason, what do you got?
Hashtag
Owen Burke.
Hashtag prematurely gray.
I'll say it again. Go see Ride Along.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations. I love Thanks. That. Congratulations.
I really enjoyed my my in theater experience in that. Yeah. June, what do you got?
My Twitter feed handle is at Miss June Diane.
And you have something on Redbox, don't you?
Oh yeah, Ass Backwards is available on Redbox.
Fantastic movie.
And of course, just another reminder, you can get my comic book, Aliens vs. Parker, at Amazon.com. Just type in Aliens vs. Parker. That's easy. Or my name. You can find it. It's a cool comic book. I think it's funny. People like it. And I think you will too. You can also get it in your local comic book shop. Support independent comic book shops. They're the best. And a big thanks to our engineer, Cody. Thank you very much, Cody. Thank you to all the people that help this show every single week. I'm talking about people like Avril Halley, who pulls all of our clips. I'm talking about Nathan Kiley, who does all of our research. I'm talking about Leanna Waldron, who does all of our amazing design. And, of course, Katie Dyer, who does our How Did This Get Made social media profiles. Oh, my God, she's awesome. You can follow us on Twitter at HDGTM. That's our initials. We have an official Twitter page. Check us out. Go to our Facebook page. And as always, if you have a correction and a mission about today's episode, head on over to Earwolf. Fill out those boards. Let us know what we missed, what we didn't talk about, because we'll read them on our mini episode, which happens in between every one of our main episodes. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next time.
Toodaloo.
Bye.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio. Boom.com. The wolf dead.
Hey, guys. It's Ashir.
And Nicole.
From Best Friends.
Our podcast has been out for a few months.
If you haven't listened to it,
you should.
We've already asked the big questions in life.
Imagine if we could lay eggs.
Okay, sure. I guess we...
Wouldn't that be funny if you could eat from yourself?
No, because that's like cannibalism.
Not when you eat yourself.
What?
Hmm?
Answer listener questions.
Hi, Nicole and Sashir. What happens if Sashir dies first? I mean, I've never thought of it.
Well,
I would be so sad.
Oh, no, Nicole. I'm not gonna die.
Take BuzzFeed quizzes. Let's pick 8 foods and we'll give you a sex position to try.
Whoa.
This is wild.
Plus, we bring on other funny best friends to talk about their friendship.
I almost want to cry. I don't know why that really made me feel emotional. But
it's because it's pure to talk about
it is.
Friendship.
It's nice.
It's so nice.
It's like so rare to like articulate it, but she's always there for me. Like I think she's just somebody who...
Oh, I love this. I love it so much.
Oh my God.
It's really sweet.
Best Friends with Nicole Byer and Sashir Zameda is new every Wednesday.
On Stitcher.
Apple Podcasts.
Spotify or wherever
you get your podcasts.
Listen.
Oh my God.